are going to start. We do not have a quorum. Senator Vickerman went back to his office.
He's in a different committee.
Oh, he's in a different committee.
Yeah.
So
he'll be back and forth.
He'll be back and forth, but it's necessary just because of the timelines that we have that we get started and have some of our discussions about our wonderful LCCMR package. What I would just like to note for the record, though, because maybe one shouldn't be prideful, but I do think it's important to note for the record that several of the folks we are funding and have funded in the past are now international rock star scientists. So I want you all to look in your packet to see a news release that I asked staff to put in here about Dr. David Tillman's work. He wins a top international ecological prize. I think we've all known that he has been a rock star in our community and is nationally and internationally known, but to receive this prize is just super. And so he really deserves the title of rock star scientist. I don't know whether staff can help us out, but I know we have been helping fund some of his work for several in several of our different packages. Ms. Thornton, would you remember how many?
Madam Chair and members, we have funded a variety of different wildlife biofuels, looking at native plantings, native prairies, over the last several biennia. And there is a recommendation from the commission to the legislature to fund a new project led by Dr. Tillman that's in the House File 2624 for $221,000.
Thank you. I think it's just important if members just read the second sentence or the second sentence in the press release. It's a summary of the work that he has done, and it's just wonderful. But that's not all we have. We have another superstar, and Deb Schwackhammer, Dr. Schwackhammer, also received a wonderful prize. And again, we're proposing funding for her to continue her work. And has that been passed around? It's just been passed around. I just want people to note that. So that was what I had to say this morning.
Well, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, I appreciate your comment. And let me just add to that. I think, you know, it's been really interesting to see that oftentimes the LCCMR and the work that we do and the projects that we fund don't get a lot of public attention, except for those, you know, those TV commercials with, you know, hugging bears and all that. People don't necessarily know what we do, and I think there's been more press coverage in this year, and that's a good thing. And I think we should brag about the fact that what we funded in our LCCMR bill is some of the world's preeminent scientists, as you just mentioned, Dr. Tillman and Dr. Schwackhammer. And we also have one of our preeminent polar explorers and educators in world,
That's
Will Steger. They're all Minnesota. We're lucky to have them in Minnesota. And Will Steger, we had a little discussion about him and his credentials on the Senate floor, and so I'm very familiar with them and the fact that he has degrees and advanced degrees from St. Thomas and a number of honorary degrees from a number of universities and has won a number of awards from around the world for his work in you know, many firsts in polar exploration, but also his lifetime career as an educator and the work that he's done with thousands and thousands of school children around the world. And so I think it is a nice place to start just to let the public know that what we're doing. There's not a lot of places to fund research or that type of work in the state of Minnesota, especially in a world of diminishing budgets. And the LCCMR is funding some of the preeminent scientific work and educational, environmental educational work that's being done around the world right now. Certainly that's being done in the United States. So I'm really proud of it, and so I wanted to start on that high note as well.
Thank you. Just as you were talking, I wonder, Ms. Thornton, if you would put on the agenda for LCCMR for our next meeting that maybe we should talk about our website and adding something to our website talking about some of the super things that are happening and talking about some of the folks that we've funded. If that could just be an agenda item for our next meeting.
Madam Chair, members, that would be great. Yes.
And Madam Chair, it just sort of, you know, a lot of times we work on things here at the legislature, and people out in our communities that we represent really appreciate these projects, but they don't know where the money comes from. And this is one of those things that is very common that people. So it would be good to see some of those things that have come from the LCCMR funding. So.
Did you want to do a little history? Was that?
Madam Chair, I think that would be great. I think it would be really helpful for us. Also, there's been discussion about, and I hope we can also talk about the information and the letter we've received from the governor's office and their perspective on some of the projects in the bill and some questions that have been raised about research and about what is the intent of LCCMR funding, what does the Constitution allow? And I think that would be a really great place to start the discussion today as well. And we, on the Senate side, have some very knowledgeable people in that area. Senator Frederickson, who was one of the people who was here when we created the LCCMR and knows that history as well or better than anyone, and Mr. Knopf, who also has a really amazing grasp of what we've been doing over the decades in terms of the basis for the work that we are doing today. And I'd love to have both of them speak to that.
I think that would be super. Yes. Senator Frederickson, do you?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm not sure where to start, but going back to 1988, when the first constitutional amendment was placed before the voters, there were two issues that were talked about a lot. One was research. And in fact, if I may, could I distribute a letter that I wrote along with a co-author that was in the St. Paul Pioneer Press?
That'd be wonderful. If could you
very well
help. Yeah, thanks.
Madam Chair, can I introduce Mary Kemp, who is our committee page, who is being very helping the conference committee today.
Thank you.
And this was a letter that I wrote along with Vin Weber, who was at the time a congressman from my congressional district, along with several. We wrote the letter, but we also had formed a group of several Republican legislators who were supporting passage of the constitutional amendment. And one of the issues that I thought was very important about what I want to point out in this letter is research, because when we formed the Environmental Trust Fund, we thought that this would be a very valuable source of consistent funding for research. And if you'll look at the couple lines that I had Wendy Havistow highlight, you'll see where we talk about the essentials of research and how important it is to have consistent long-term funding for research. So that funding of research goes all the way back to the passage of the first constitutional amendment that established the lottery and established the Environmental Trust Fund. So that's one point I want to make, that the thread of using environment ETF for research goes all the way back to that very first constitutional amendment, and I still think it's one of the most valuable things we do with the Environmental Trust Fund, because that has so much potential for new ways of conservation and also now of controlling exotic species. And the other issue I'd like to point out is environmental education. When the lottery was first being proposed, one of the uses of the lottery that was very popular was to devote it all to designate it all for education. That was a very strong emphasis. And many of us thought that would not be an appropriate, would certainly be an appropriate use of the funds, but would not be a wise use of the funds, because people would perceive that there's a lot of money coming from the lottery, and it's all going to education. Therefore, we don't have to worry about K-12 education anymore, because they're getting all of that lottery money. So it was decided to not use the lottery for education, but instead to divide it for two purposes. One was the environment, the conservation, the Environmental Trust Fund, and the other was for an organization called the Greater Minnesota Corporation, which ultimately within a couple years got into so much controversy and misspent so much money that they were eliminated. But then the 40% that ended up being constitutionally dedicated to the Environment Trust Fund, there was an emphasis, I think partly because of the earlier emphasis on education, that it be used for environmental education. And I remember Senator Moe talking very passionately about using monies from the Environmental Trust Fund for environmental education. I remember him in committee talking about that, and I also have a transcript of one of the committees where he talked about that. And I know Willard Munger also talked about using the money for environmental education, so that too was a thread that goes all the way back to the beginning of the Environmental Trust Fund. And in fact, some of the first appropriations from the ETF were for environmental education. And in fact, I went back to check my memory, and I got got three of the legislative auditors' reports from, I think, 92, 94, and 97, where the legislative auditor had audited the appropriations for environmental education. There was some critique about how the Department of Education had spent the funds, but there was no mention that it was not an appropriate use of environmental trust fund monies. So I think it's important that we educate young people and educate our citizens about conservation and environment. So I've always been a strong supporter of that.
Madam Chair, can I ask if we can keep Senator Frederickson on as a consultant next year? We can't afford to let him leave.
Yes, I plan to spend a lot of time fishing.
Oh, wow. I guess that's your title.
did you want Mr. Wright?
Well, I think, Madam Chair, Ms. Thornton and the LCCMR staff have a handout in your packet that would be probably good to look at dealing with the same issue. It's a summary of 2010 research proposals, and on the top it has the constitutional language on what the money is to be spent for. You can see the assets shall be appropriated by law for the public purpose of protection, conservation, preservation, enhancement of the state's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. And so then the issue is what does that mean? I think you'll see in the governor's letter that there's some people have a different views on what this means. But if you look at the statutory language below, and this is what the statute says about what the money can be spent for. In fact, it can only be spent for these items. And you have to remember that this statute was in place in 1988. It was passed in the same law that the constitutional amendment was placed on the ballot. So it's contemporaneous with the passage or with the enactment of the law putting that constitutional amendment on the ballot.
Could I ask Mr. Knopf a question? Interject here. So when folks voted for the constitutional amendment, this was on the books, and so folks knew.
Madam Chair, yes, it was already on the books when the amendment was on the ballot. So this was. If you generally, when you're looking at legislative intent on a law or constitutional amendment, if the plain language would prohibit it, regardless of what the intent was, it's not going to be an issue. But if there's any ambiguity, the legislative intent is very important. If you look at that statute, you can see that the items that are listed, the Reinvest in Minnesota program, research that contributes to increasing the effectiveness of protecting and managing the state's environment or natural resources. And then you also you have a collection and analysis of information that assists in developing the state's environment and natural resources policies. Enhancement of public education, awareness, and understanding necessary for the protection, conservation, restoration, and enhancement of air, land, water, forest, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources and capital projects, and then you can see the rest of them. But I think the important point here is that this was on the books, as the chair mentioned, at the time that the amendment was on the ballot. So this was clearly the intent, was that these things, that the money would go towards these things. In fact, it says it can only be spent on those things. And there's a subdivision later, a section later, that talks about what it can't be spent on. People have talked about changing that over the years. I always suggest that they maybe think a little more carefully before they do that, because that was also on the books when the amendment passed. And so if you start changing some of these statutes that talked about how the money was going to be spent, it kind of goes beyond just a regular law change. I mean, I think it's important to keep the faith with the people who voted for this.
I would agree.
And so I think if you look at this and you look at the governor's letter, I'm not sure that they're consistent. The governor's letter seems to point out that some of these projects aren't consistent with the constitutional amendment, but they are consistent with 116P.08, and that was the legislative intent when the amendment passed.
Madam Chair?
We have never resigned. Senator
Frederickson. Madam Chair, and I wanted to concur with Mr. Knopf had said. We specifically put the, I think the effective date of 116P was if the constitutional amendment was approved in the fall. I believe it went into effect like the next day, mm-hmm. So people knew what was going to happen with the money if it were approved. And because of another discussion I was involved in a year or two ago, I looked at a Supreme Court ruling of Rice versus Conley, and I'd like to read just a couple sentences from that. This is from 1992, and I believe this had to do with off-track racing, a bill we passed with off-track racing, but there's a general statement here, and this is from the Rice versus Conley decision. The rules governing the courts and construing articles of the state constitution are well settled. The primary purpose of the courts is to ascertain and give effect to the intention of the legislature and people in adopting the article in question. So being the 116P was proposed with the constitutional amendment and went into effect with it, I think the intention of the people is pretty clear that that's how the money is going to be used.
And Madam Chair, that appears to have been the case for the last 22 years or so.
Madam Chair? I'm curious as to what was actually on the ballot back then when it was passed. I know you talk about this 116P.08. Was that language on the ballot explaining the constitutional amendment?
Madam Chair, Representative House, no. But it was, in effect, the law at the time.
How could we have a law at the time, Madam Chair, a law at the time without a passed constitutional amendment?
Madam Chair, it wasn't effective yet, but it was still on the books.
But Jane and Joe Public knew that was on the books. They were told it was on the books. It was advertised. They read it when they cast their ballot.
Madam Chair, I think that amendment was advertised extensively, and there was a lot of discussion about what the money was going to be used for.
Madam Chair, I understand what you're saying, but I also understand the governor's opinion. If the constitutional amendment that was on the ballot just the amendment itself without 116P, they would be voting just on the language of the constitutional amendment, period. And it's been mentioned legislative intent several times this morning, and Minnesota is a journal state. Legislative intent means nothing. We can say whatever we want in this committee. It doesn't mean anything. It's what's written in the law that's voted on.
That's not completely accurate, though, because you look at the plain language of the law, but it's clear, even in Chapter 645, it says that you look at the plain language, and where there's ambiguity, you do look at the contemporaneous legislative intent, the intent of the statements by legislators and other people while the act is being passed. I can pull out the sections to Chapter 645. I mean, we have a law that says that.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm not going to debate the whole Constitution, Minnesota Constitution, but No, but legislative intent, this is a journal state, it means nothing. It's what's written in law.
Well, I think the point is this was written in law at the time the people went to the polls. And it was written in law that said, this law will go into effect if you vote yes. I got that correct. Mm-hmm. Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, and many of us were talking about what was going to happen if the constitutional amendment was approved. One of the things that I wrote about was research. I also talked about other things, and also the legislative record, things that Senator Moe said and Representative Lagenius, Representative Munger, as authors of the bills, what they said in committee and in public, gave clarity to what the intent of the constitutional amendment was.
Yes, but let me, just before we go, this was on the ballot in 1988.
Right.
And again?
It was on Madam Chair, the constitutional amendment allowing the establishment of a lottery was on the ballot in 1988. Mm-hmm. And then the constitutional dedication of the money, the 40%, to the Environmental Trust Fund was in 1990.
Madam Chair, just the law that created the lottery or put the lottery on the ballot also put the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund on the ballot, but there wasn't that connection between the two at the time, and then two years later they...
Right. It was appropriated by law, not by the Constitution.
I think there was... I guess the point I'm thinking about is there was a lot on the record by the second go-around.
Well, I
think it's representative.
I was just wondering what the whole point of the conversation was here this morning.
Well,
Senator
Madam
Anderson's going to talk about the point.
Madam Chair and Representative Rukavina, the point is that the governor is questioning the constitutionality of some of our recommendations. And so I think...
And we're questioning his senator.
We're going to bring them up soon and ask them, what their basis for their objections are. But I think it's important to understand what the Constitution and the law says first, so we all understand that. And, you know, there's been a lot of debate about what the new constitutional amendment means, the protect, enhance, restore definitions. That's very much in play. But I would, point out that we didn't have a statute in place at the time that amendment was passed in 2008 that defined each of those phrases in the Constitution. But in the LCCMR, in the Environmental Trust Fund, we did. And so it's quite different what we're facing here. We had a law in place that said what expenditures could be used for that was debated and passed into law at the time that the constitutional amendment was passed. And so I think it's been interpreted that way for 22 years. So I'm curious to hear what the governor's representatives say about that.
Why don't you do that now? But before you ask him to come up, I just would note as we debate the current meaning of protection. Protection was in the Constitution in 1988, and we have used that word since 1988. So when the people went to the ballot and we used the word again, there was a long history.
That's true.
So go ahead.
I didn't. Did you? Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I wanted to ask, I know there's several administration folks here, and I think is Mr. Pearson here from the governor's office? We're hoping there's someone who can speak to what's in the governor's letter. And we have, I know Mr. Myers here, and Mr. Glahn is here, and Mr. Chavez is here. Madam Chair, I'd like to just ask them some questions. If there's no one from the governor's office, we'll ask the folks from the DNR and the Office of Energy Security to speak to this. Chairing, so I want to be respectful. All right, Madam, we'll do it together. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair's members, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Jim Pearson has asked me to talk and present to you the governor's comment letter. But I'm going to do that from a perspective, first of all, from the DNR and our narrow perspective on this package, and then talk generally about the other projects that are listed in the bill. You'll go on to see, and I'm assuming, there isn't copies, I don't know if they've been handed out for the audience, but basically the letter says that I am pleased with the majority of projects with both bills follow the LCCMR recommendations, and that there is bipartisan support that the money appropriated from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund be spent only for the constitutionally required public purpose of protection, conservation, preservation, and enhancement of the state's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. However, I am troubled that some of the projects listed in the bill don't appear to meet the constitutional requirements or received a relatively low score by LCCMR members, which signals that these projects are of a lower priority. In addition, I am concerned that the House position authorizing $4.2 million for park improvement at the expense of land acquisition undermines current commitments made by the state for purchase of priority in-holdings within the state park system. The DNR's position is, and actually the governor's office, supports the Senate position on the acquisition issue. I know one of the major issues you have before you is the amendment that was passed on the House floor that deals with taking acquisition dollars out of a variety of projects and putting them into park restoration projects. In addition, the language that's in the House bill says that those dollars must be divided equally amongst all state parks. So that gives us about $66,000 to be used at Itasca State Park, our most popular, and some of the less popular parks like Kylan Woods. So it sets up an inequity amongst the distribution of those dollars rather than high-priority projects or something like that. But it's with that sense that I speak from the DNR's point of view, Madam Chairs. Going on to the specific projects, in my conversations with the governor's office, these projects came to light looking at the lens of the constitutional language from their perspective, and also listening to the debates that have occurred in both the House and Senate committees as the bills have moved forward, and on the floors of the House and Senate. I'm not prepared to go project by project into these, why they may or may not have met the constitutional requirement. I think if you look at them at the onset, you all are more familiar with the projects than I am, but the question that occurs at their level, looking at these projects, do they meet the perspective of the public purpose of protection, conservation, preservation, and enhancement of the state's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources? Looking at it from that perspective and the concern that has occurred in the debate in both bodies on this bill related to jobs and other issues, it was the reason that brought these projects to light from the governor's office's perspective.
Well, I trust you've been in the room, as we have heard from Senator Fredrickson, Mr. Knopf, and I trust you will be taking back to the governor's office the letter that Senator Fredrickson, exactly. I told her I have not had my coffee this morning. We were here really late last night, so I apologize for anything I might say right now. And also take back this handout that we have been referencing and that Mr. Knopf talked about, that I think gives a clear history of the constitutional amendment, and it was good for me to hear the update of it, and I appreciate that this morning. But I think that would be helpful for the governor too.
And Madam Chair, if I could just ask Mr. Meyer, I'm just really having trouble. I would really like someone to tell me why these particular projects are concerning. I just don't know. We didn't discuss any. I don't remember discussing any of these specifically on the Senate floor, the ones that are bulleted, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And so I just don't have a clue why some environmental education projects and not others have been singled out, why some research projects and not others have been singled out. The only specific I've heard from the governor's office is projects that were previously vetoed, they don't want to see in here again. That's the only specific indication. And besides the acquisition, which I appreciate, I like the Senate position better too, so thank you. But the other issues, we need some clarity about why if we are going to give the governor's position any consideration, we need to know why he feels that way and if there's anything we can do to correct those problems. So if you can't speak to that, is there someone else who can?
Madam Chair, not at this time. I think if you go back to the comments in the letter, the governor's office has gone through, followed the whole LCCMR process, and they made an effort to communicate up front to the conference committee their concerns. I think that's what people have been asking for, so that's where this letter comes from. But there's a couple things that they've focused on. One is the ranking process and where the projects have gone through the process, the debate that has occurred on some of these, and just looking at it from the lens of the constitutional side of things. I will go back and try to get some more clarification for you and work on that issue and present this information back to the governor's office.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, I wonder who picked these seven projects. There must be somebody who decided these have raised concerns, and it would be nice if that person could come and talk to us, because so far we're not getting answers.
And I think there is a misunderstanding of the ranking process that perhaps folks in the governor's office are looking at the ranking process used by the Heritage Council, and the process used by the LCCMR is entirely, entirely different. So it seems that they're applying a standard used by one group that was their process, when that was not the process used here. So we have to have some clear report back on that.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Yes.
I wish we could really get going, because this isn't a constitutional issue. Come on. It's about politics. Okay. The governor really, this might be his argument, but the fact of the matter is he probably doesn't like a number of these projects.
But why?
Who knows?
I just want to know why.
I don't know why. I don't know why he picks on me. I'm always so nice to him. So I don't know why we're debating the issue, because in the end, we are the legislature. Mr. Knopf, you can help me out on this one, but we have the right to look at the LCMR proposals and change them. Those are recommendations to us. Those citizens don't have an election certificate, and there's nowhere in the Constitution, if we're going to talk constitutional issues, where it says citizens get to spend money. And if I recall correctly, when we argued about, changing it and putting some citizens on there, and I think the argument was the governor thought that there was a little bit of porking going on. Wasn't that one of his arguments? He wanted the citizens on there? Yes.
Oh.
Well, I've seen a number of our citizens on the LCCMR recuse themselves from votes because they're associated with people who are asking for money. I have only seen one legislator that I can recall, and it was you, because your son was involved somehow or worked for somebody that was asking for money. So let's face it, there's as much porking going on by citizens as there ever was by legislators. Let's be honest about it. And I don't know if anybody wants to argue about that, Senator Frederickson. I'm more than happy to argue. I'm in a good mood this morning. I was here late, too, so I'll lose that as an excuse. I'm confused. But anyway, you want to argue? Let's argue about it. But that's the fact of the matter. So why don't we just get on with the business and do our business and talk about the differences in the House and Senate bill? Because the governor, you know how he is. He's going to veto the projects he wants to veto anyhow. He's been doing it in all of our bills, Senator Anderson and Representative Guineas, for 8 years now.
Madam Chair.
So frankly, I really don't care what he thinks about constitutionality, because the bottom line is the legislature decides what comes out of both the 3/8, that's what statute says, and what comes out of LCCMR in the final analysis.
We have two more. Senator Frederickson and then Representative House.
Madam Chair, I don't want to lose this opportunity to agree with Representative Rucco.
Evidently, I'm not as confused as I thought I was, Senator. Thank you.
With monies appropriations from the Environmental Trust Fund and from the new legacy account, the final appropriations from the legislature, and we have every right to review those projects, and if we see something that could be done better, we have the authority to change it if we want to. So I've agreed with you on this, but I think it's also good to review the history of the Environmental Trust Fund, because I sense that there's individuals who continually want to narrow the focus and narrow the purpose of the Environmental Trust Fund, I think that'd be a mistake. I think we should keep it for the broader purpose of all environment and natural resources, and not allow it to be narrowed just because we don't speak up and interject a little historical perspective into the discussion.
Representative House.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I can see a couple on here that the governor might think don't fit the $160,000 appropriation for the teacher training workshops for digital photography. You might think maybe that's a K-12 issue, something like that. And the one right below it, the $218,000 for the outdoor classroom. I could envision that he'd think this is more teaching students, more K-12 funding. Then that's, I'm just giving you my interpretation of what the governor thinks. But I think most importantly, we should simply ask Mr. Meyer to go to the governor and flat out ask him that if we pass this bill and include this, will he line item veto these projects? If that's the case, then we have a decision to make. Are we going to go off the cliff and pass them, take a chance that he won't, and if he does, that we have enough votes to override, et cetera? If not, then let's take him out and put the money somewhere else before he does line item veto.
I thought you said take him out.
As folks go back, and as Mr. Meyer goes back and talks to the governor's office with Representative Howe's message, I think one of the things to look at is the teacher training that you talked about, and in particular, there is another section in the bill about outdoor education that, for the life of me, I can't see a distinction between that one and the ones in here. Can't see it.
Madam Chair, I'm just giving you my opinion of what the governor's thoughts are.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess it makes me think that perhaps the governor needs more information about these projects. And I don't know who, and if it's, you know, we need to talk to the chief of staff or the governor personally. That would be highly unlikely, but to make sure they understand what's in these projects. And because, as I agree with the chair, that, you know, I'm very familiar with the project in the city of St. Paul, and it is a creation of a classroom that will be an outdoor classroom that is not part of the K-12 system, but will work with teachers and allow them a chance to bring hundreds and hundreds of school kids outdoors to learn about restoration of forests and to experience the outdoors in an urban area where kids are often don't have a lot of that experience in their day-to-day life. So it's, you know, sometimes, you know, Representative Rukavina, I am an eternal optimist and retain hope that if we can actually have a dialogue about what we're doing here, maybe the governor will listen. And I hope you would agree that that is possible, that we shouldn't just give up because he has an opinion, but I think if we can talk about it and clarify the facts, perhaps we can come to an understanding. Maybe I'm hopelessly naive to think that.
Well, I hope you're not hopelessly naive, because the Como Park project is exactly like a group of projects where DNR is getting funding that is not on this list. That's why I'm having, I can't see the distinctions. I mean, it just, I can't see it, and we need further help because maybe my mind still needs more power.
Madam Chair, I'm just giving you my opinion of what the governor, his intent and how he sees it. I've experienced a little bit of conversation with the governor, and I tend to sometimes get close to what he's thinking. And Senator Anderson, I don't want to give up either, but I do know when it's time to back off and keep my powder dry, which I'll do right now.
Well, Madam Chair, and again, I am hopeful that the governor and his representatives will listen to the facts, and that this wouldn't be on the list by chance because it's in my district or my neighborhood. I certainly hope that wouldn't be the cause of a veto threat.
Oh, I'm sure that's right.
I'm sure that's not it. And I think we want to be very clear on the record that that would not be the reason. So let's establish the real reasons that there's questions here. And I think we will have an opportunity to bring up and have some brief testimony on that project and some of these other ones, hopefully brief, but maybe not right now. So, Madam Chair, I wanted to, if I could we ask the Office of Energy Security just to step forward too and give us their thoughts? And I know Mr. Chavez, I'd like to ask him his thoughts, because I understand he spent many hours in the LCCMR office reviewing the research and the peer review on these projects, so I think he probably has more detailed information. Mr. Glahn, I'd really like to ask Mr. Chavez some questions.
Madam Chair, Bill Glahn, Deputy Director of Commerce, Director of the Office of Energy Security. Before I answer any questions, it really is my understanding that Commissioner Meyer was designated by the governor's office to speak for the governor. So I'm happy to be as helpful as I can, but I don't know if I have anything more to add than what Commissioner Meyer has added.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Glahn, I don't mean to be flippant here, but I laughed because Mr. Meyer, he did read the letter, but he said he couldn't really answer any of our questions. So I'm hoping there might be somebody somewhere in the Pawlenty administration or staff that could answer those questions that we've raised. And I thought perhaps Mr. Chavez could, because he's the one who seems to have familiarized himself with the details here. And I don't know if he's told you everything that he's learned in his research on this bill.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, that is certainly true. I have sat in on a number of the LCCMR meetings myself personally and hearings in both houses on the bill. So I certainly have thoughts on some of the projects, but Commissioner Meyer was designated to speak for the governor. I'm happy to participate with the governor's office to share the thoughts on what we have. You know, DNR might have different thoughts, PCA might have different thoughts, or a number of agencies involved with these projects. And we, both Commissioner Meyer and I, heard the questions posed by the chair and by yourself and the other members. We will take those back to the governor's office and see what we can come back with in terms of specific answers to your questions.
Mr. Glahn, Madam Chair, can I ask if you and Mr. Chavez are not prepared to speak to any thoughts on this bill, can I ask why Mr. Chavez has spent many hours reviewing those documents? Is there a reason for that?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, there are a number of projects that are included in the bill that are energy related. There are a number of projects under the definition of education which have an energy angle. There are a number of projects included in the package that have climate implications, which also fall under the Office of Energy Security. So in order for us to give informed advice to the governor on this bill and on the specific energy climate related projects, we've been following the process, as have other agencies who have different aspects of it that they're following. So we, in giving advice to the governor, strictly limit ourselves to stuff within our portfolio. So, for example, for the land, that has nothing to do with energy security. DNR would be the agency to speak on land. There might be other items here that are PCA-related or Department of Health-related, that they are the subject matter experts. We have confined our review to those projects under the portfolio of the Office of Energy Security, with the idea being at some point the governor will need advice on the bill when it hits his desk. But it hasn't hit his desk yet, so I'm very reluctant to go and speak to the merits of specific projects, because we have not yet given our opinion to the governor's office, other than very high-level discussions as it's moved through the process.
Well, is there something in all of these projects that you have tagged will make us Minnesotans less secure with regard to energy? You are the Office of Energy Security, so obviously taxpayers are paying you to make us more secure with regard to energy. And I'm asking you, have you seen anything in this package that makes Minnesota less secure?
Madam Chair, certainly the word security is within the title of the office, but it's not the only focus that I have as the Deputy Commissioner of Commerce for Energy. We have projects that are energy related. The governor at some point will ask for advice on the merits of the projects. Again, I always give my caveats, not a constitutional scholar, so I'm not going to weigh in on that, but when the time comes, we will give our advice on the energy-related, climate-related projects. And, you know, the only one I could specifically comment on, I think Senator Anderson's already commented on, it includes a project the governor vetoed last year. And as far as I know, the governor has not come to a different conclusion on that project.
Well, Mr. Glahn, if you were familiar with that project, you would know there are some differences between this year's project and last year's project. So I assume that you or your staff have explored that in detail in their examination of and participation in the hearings would understand that. Are you aware that the project is different substantially?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, I have followed it, and I know there have been some changes made, and I'm aware of the differences.
Okay, so
can't call them to mind as I sit here, but yeah.
Madam Chair, Mr. Glahn, I would hope that the governor, if there were changes, that could be seen as an effort to accommodate the governor's concerns. And so Madam Chair, first I have to correct you. This is not taxpayers that are paying for Mr. Glahn's time and Mr. Chavez's time. It's actually ratepayers, so that when we pay our electric bills and our heat bills, we're paying for them to come to the meetings of the LCCMR and to review the peer review research, which may be a perfectly appropriate use of our ratepayer dollars, but I haven't heard anything yet to tell me why you're doing this. Because, well, maybe I'm sorry, I don't want to lose my temper. You have said why you're, I know, you don't egg me on, Mercavina. I'll get there. You have said what you've done. You've said you're advising the governor, and that is appropriate. But then if you advise the governor, but then the governor and you won't tell us what you think about it or what he thinks about it, then you're not serving the public, and you're certainly not serving the legislature. And I believe you work for all of us, not just for the governor. So what have you told the governor, or what is the governor telling us about the problems that are energy-related in this bill? Just please give me some information.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, I certainly understand your question, and I have no qualms about giving you my, as you know from appearing in front of you many, many times, no qualms about giving you my opinions and whatever information that I possess that could help your deliberations on matters before you. But I am very clear direction that the commission, oops. Commissioner Meyer was designated to speak for the office of the governor in this hearing. And we will, and I can assure you, Senator Anderson, we will take your questions back, confer with the governor's office, and then come back to you.
And
with
tell us you don't
and,
know.
And tell us what the specific concerns are with the specific projects mentioned
well,
here.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Glahn, I know you've advised, the governor is relying on your advice. You and Mr. Chavez are the experts on energy for the state of Minnesota, for the Pawlenty administration. You have spent hours at great expense to all Minnesotans, or small expense, at expense to Minnesotans to determine what concerns exist on the energy-related proposals.
Mm-hmm.
You won't tell us what those concerns are, and the governor won't tell us what those concerns are. So how are we supposed to do our job? Would you please tell us what your concerns are specifically? Can you do that today?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, I can tell you what my concerns are of only of the two projects that in here that I believe fall under the portfolio of the Office of Energy Security. I cannot speak
Please.
To any of the other projects.
What are they, Madam Chair, Mr. Glahn?
Well,
please tell us.
It's the project I mentioned, the project that was vetoed by the governor last year. It's on page 2, the second bullet. I am aware that there have been changes made to the project. There is a somewhat different scope. I don't think the changes to the scope are substantial enough to overcome what the governor's objections were the last go-around. Now, he might have a different opinion of it, but, you know, it is one that his office flagged and put it on the list. And the other project would be the carbon sequestration project, the first one on the list. And again, from my review of that, concerns about the merits of the project. I don't know about the constitutional question, but the project, I have concerns about the merits of the project, whether it's a question that is worth asking, whether it's a question that hasn't already been answered in other fora, and whether it represents a good use of whoever funds you want to characterize. So, but those are my concerns, and I'm expressing my opinion as from what I've heard of those projects. There were two that I had concerns about. But the others, I don't think I can make any kind of a case that they would fall under anything energy security related.
Madam Chair, can I ask Ms. Thornton if those two projects were peer-reviewed?
Madam Chair, members, if I understand Mr. Glahn correctly, you're speaking to the first bullet, the $144,000?
That's correct.
For potential for carbon sequestration. That was actually one that we are providing an additional match, a value-added match, to a National Science Foundation award. And we actually, instead of doing our own peer review process, relied on the National Science Foundation peer review process on that and came in at a larger amount, was reduced in order to, so that really... We relied on the scientific expertise of the National Science Foundation to provide the value-added benefit to that. They could do a better peer review job than we could begin to do, and we often do that, whether it's with USGS, National Science Foundation, or other scientific organizations. And then the life cycle cost analysis, which, again, had been mentioned that has went through rather extensive revision in response to accommodating new information and looking forward. And that we did not peer review that one because that's more of a socioeconomic study. And traditionally, we have not peer reviewed socioeconomic type of studies as fitting under our statutory definition.
Madam Chair, thank you, Ms. Thornton. And on the first project relating to carbon sequestration in Minnesota's shallow lakes and wetlands, Mr. Glahn, do you question the National Science Foundation's judgment on this bill, on this proposal? You question whether it's an appropriate project for scientific research?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, as with all my other caveats, I'm not a scientist, but as my layman's view of it, it doesn't seem like the most useful use of funds.
And why is that, Mr. Glahn?
The subject matter, the research that's been done similar to it. Again, I'm not a scientist, not a member of the National Academy or the National Science Foundation, but you asked me for my view. Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, that's my view.
Madam Chair, Mr. Glahn, I appreciate that. I guess you've made it clear you're not a scientist, nor am I, but I guess I would tend to defer to the judgment of those who are. And the National Science Foundation is a pretty well-established group of the top scientists in the country. And so why, I guess I'm wondering if you're privy to any knowledge that they're not privy to that would suggest this is not worthy, a worthy project. I'm not following where you're getting your concerns from, you know, where that comes from, if it's not from the judgment of scientists.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, my lay view, reviewing the record of the project and its relation to others under consideration.
Senator Anderson, I, even without coffee, I appreciate that you did correct me and say that these were not taxpayer dollars that are funding these two gentlemen, rather ratepayer dollars.
Well,
which makes my concern even more pointed, because you used as your judgment reference most useful use of funds. So I'm going to turn the question back to you and say, is your spending all this time on these two projects the most useful use of tax ratepayer funds? I can't believe that it is. You can justify that later, and how many hours you all have spent of ratepayer funds. That will be something for another committee at another time. But I think your use of the most useful use of funds was probably a good thing to apply to yourself. Representative Rukavina.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator, this is a very interesting exchange, and I appreciate it because it is puzzling, but it often, you know, the ratepayer and the taxpayer, aren't they the same person? And aren't we the ones that put in statute that we were going to fund that Soviet-style organization, the Office of Energy Security? It sounds like a page right out of the old Soviet Union. But anyway, I didn't name it that. But, you know, aren't we the ones that put in statute that they were going to be funded by surcharges on ratepayers? And
Madam Chair, you're absolutely right. And that's exactly my budget. But, and that's why
exactly.
I want to make sure we're not wasting
Madam
this
Chair,
money.
Madam Chair and Senator, and I agree with you 100%, but they're the same person. And the DNR and the University of Minnesota does the same thing. And I sit in the CMR meetings, and sometimes there's, you know, 5-10 people from the DNR. And I don't know if they're there on the general fund dollars or on a hunting and fishing license or on a boat license or a snowmobile charge or whatever. And the same with the university. I mean, they're there all on the consumers, taxpayers, ratepayers, however you want to look at it. And sometimes it puzzles me as to why they're there at all, because there's so many of them for one project. But, you know, I really like this line of questioning, because if we do have a, you know, member of the executive branch of government that is making a recommendation, and I don't know if I, sir, if I did actually hear you, Mr. Was it, what's
Glahn.
Glahn? I didn't hear it. Did you actually answer the senator? Did you tell the governor or somebody in the higher up over there that he should veto these two projects?
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, I have not.
So you sat in all those meetings. He needs your expert advice, and you're getting paid by the ratepayers, and you don't like them, but you didn't tell him these two projects in this letter were veto bait.
Madam Chair, Senator, or Representative Rukavina, just to be clear, I have not given, you know, the bill has not reached the governor's desk. I have not given my advice yet to the governor. So, you know, it's I have not come to a conclusion. I'm waiting to hear the discussion here.
So, and Madam Chair, and just in following, you know, Senator Anderson's line of questioning, somebody else then that didn't go to the meetings said these weren't good projects and should be put in this letter, not you.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, back to my original statement. The governor's office designated Commissioner Meyer to answer questions about the
letter.
Madam Chair, as I'm trying to be as helpful as I can without being evasive and without stepping on Commissioner Meyer's
everybody else's
job.
Commissioner Meyer, you may have some other information you want to share with the room.
Madam Chair, I just informed you and your staff that a decision has come from the Supreme Court ruling against the governor's unallotment authority. I'm not sure what the decision says, but I just wanted
to go to work.
Inform
that. See you guys later.
Yeah.
But Madam Chair, to Mr. Glahn's point, I was trying to get some clarification about the purpose of the letter and the language that's there. These projects are on the letter because they have raised, they've come to the level of discussion within the governor's office from many different sources. I cannot answer the question whether they will be line item vetoed or not. Until the governor receives a complete package on his desk, he will not be making that decision on what will or will not or should not be remaining in the bill. The purpose of this letter is to just to raise the questions and to clarify for people, I think, what has been going on all session on many of these projects. So I asked them specifically, should we provide more information? I think to Representative Rukavina's point, they do not see that's just not going to help the conference committee. We will just get involved with the back and forth on these specific projects. I think I would encourage the conference committee to make a decision based upon your best knowledge of these projects and the merits of them, and then we will work with you and the final product on getting that final product passed into law.
Madam Chair, and then I'll try to make this the last thing I say on this subject, because we do need to move on. And I, whenever I say that, I always become a liar, so I shouldn't even say that. Don't hold me to it. I just, Mr. Meyer, with all due respect, and, you know, we work together very well, and I appreciate your just delivering a message. I just would like someone to tell me why, when we get back into our budget conference committee, we should not make sure that there is not one penny of our state's taxpayer money or ratepayer money going to fund the time that you and your staff have spent in examining and dissecting these bills, when that information will not be available to us to negotiate with the governor. We're being told all of this, you know, you've spent all this time figuring out what projects are good, what projects are bad, to advise the governor, but we will not get a commitment until we pass this bill and send it to him as to what we can do to avoid a veto. We're not getting anything back. It's a one-way street. It's all for the purpose of the governor to make his decision, not for the purpose of legislating and negotiating and working together. And so why should we pay for that? I'm tired of paying for that. It's just a waste of, it's not serving the public, and the public shouldn't be paying for that.
I agree. When you bring up issue or the on the back page, the top bullet is money for Dr. David Tillman.
Is Bob here?
Jenna's here.
Janelle?
Janelle.
Okay.
Superstar scientist in Minnesota.
Yeah. Susan. Where's Susan?
I also
have it. Maybe I should say rock star scientist. Better than superstar. We have been proud. I mean, I am thrilled that this commission has been able to support aspects of Dr. Tillman's work. Why in the world the governor would put that project on this list has got to be one of life's mysteries. Or it says some it's totally incompetent staff work. I don't know which. But if that's why we are having to spend this time. I'm dumbfounded. You may be one thing, but I'm dumbfounded.
Madam Chair, I wonder if it would be helpful to move on and have a description of the differences between the House and Senate bills.
Yes. Do you have a copy of the
I just got a copy of the Supreme Court decision, so I will share that with
you. I think sharing that right away would be really helpful.
Is that the complete decision?
Apparently, yeah.
Madam Chair, before Rukavina leaves, I'd like to move the House position. I have to do that. It's my job. And I'll withdraw that motion.
Madam Chair, I'll move the Senate position.
All in favor?
We're going to have to hear the positions and have a very detailed description of those positions, and we will do that now. And then while Senator Anderson, if you have some insight you can give us on the constitutional ruling, I would also appreciate that, because I think this is going to have a huge impact on our lives.
Chair, I'm not, I will pay attention, I promise. And would you like House staff to do this, or Ms. Thornton, or Senate? I don't know who's prepared
Perhaps, should we have Ms. Thornton to do that, or do you want House or Senate? I think we need to go over there's no reason to go over the whole bill. We have a very defined section that we need to go over, and maybe, I don't know who would prefer to do it, but I think we need to, I would actually, instead of going over the language, because I think we're familiar with the language, go over the money detail of what is, would that be appropriate?
Well, Madam Chair, I just want to point out, too, We do have the one subdivision where I think all the differences in the money occur, but we also have the Senate did rename a number of the projects. So we do have different names for quite a few of the projects that we need to go over.
We'll take your names, you take our money.
I think that the names will not be in controversy. Right. So I think it would not be necessary to spend a lot of time on that.
Madam Chair, do we have to, can we kind of do this informally? Because I think the only difference is the amendment that I put on the House floor.
That's right.
And so let's have the discussion about the whole issue of, buying more and more land for the Department of Natural Resources to take care of, or in the case there is some, I realize that part of what I proposed was a purchase in the metropolitan area, I think for a scientific and natural area, which...
So, Representative Brookavina, before we get into the general discussion, I do think not everybody knows the specific things that would be taken out. I would like staff to go over the numbers of the specific things, and I think this is the page that we would... most helpful to work from. Am I correct about that? Ms. Thornton, could you help me out here?
Madam Chair and members, thank you. These, my recommendation, I think all staff recommendation here, we're working together, is these two pages really summarize the differences for you. And all the monetary differences occur in the bill in Subdivision 4.
Right.
And we've tried to break these out, the two different spreadsheets, so the more traditional looking spreadsheet that actually has LCCMR recommended House file, Senate, or House and Senate positions on it indicate where specifically within the language the differences are. And then we tried to summarize the types of land differences on this other spreadsheet.
I think it would be helpful if you would go over both of these so everybody has a total understanding of the money, because that is what we're talking about. So if you would go over these two in detail, so when we talk about any kind of meeting of the minds, we will have to understand the numbers.
Madam Chair, members, going off what the spreadsheet that has LCCMR recommended, House file, and House and Senate, starting with the second line down, Subdivision 4B, there is a difference for the DNR Scientific and Natural Area acquisition. These are all fee title differences in here, and there's a difference of... $381,900 in 4B for fee title acquisition. On 4C, the next line, state parkland acquisition to DNR, the difference is $2.2 million. And then the difference in the House position, on 4C is moving $4,202,400 into state park and trail improvements. Then going down to 4E, which is the Minnesota Habitat Conservation Partnership, the differences within the fee title are within that, and each of these numbers is delineated within the appropriation law. And so the House position would be $1,044,500. The Senate position is $1,400,000. And that difference comes from, I had my marked up version. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 down lines to the Nature Conservancy. The House position is $164,500. The Senate position is $210,000. So that's a difference of $45,500. Continuing down to where you see zeros, the last three lines, the House position is zero on fisheries land acquisition. Senate position is $100,000. critical lands protection. House position is zero. Senate position, 200,000. And then the 10,000 is professional services, where the House has zero, the Senate does not. And that's a allocation to DNR for fee title acquisition professional services to accommodate accepting these fee title lands. In other documents, that's been rolled up into the aquatic management areas. On 4F, subdivision 4F, the House position is 535,000. The Senate is $1.8 million. And those differences come from the second line, critical land acquisition, trust for public land. The House position was zero. The Senate position is 915,000. And then two more lines down, the fee title for Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge. The House position is at zero. The Senate position is at $350,000. So, Madam Chair and members, that essentially, those changes, those differences add up to $4,202,400 coming from those various types of lands. On the second spreadsheet, we tried to lay out for you the types of lands that those acquisition dollars would be going to, and the initial recipient of those dollars to assist in the acquisition of those lands, whether DNR is acquiring those lands directly or working with partners of Parks and Trails Council, Trust for Public Land, or Nature Conservancy. In the case of the Minnesota Valley Trust, those would be federal lands. Went over that very quickly.
Let me just, I'm just checking my boxes under where the differences are. So just to make sure that I have everything checked right, this is on the bigger page. It's under 4B, 4C, and then 4C the other way. And then I come in 4E, I have to go down 5 before I catch one, and then the bottom 3 on 4E, and then 2 in 4F. Did I pick up everything?
Madam Chair, I think I followed that, yes, correctly.
Okay. I think that's because that's where we need to see exactly where the differences are, and that's what I was trying to do there. Members understand the differences. I think there's another difference that I would like if you could help us out with. Some of these lands have already been purchased. I would look at the 4C, purchased with the understanding that DNR would acquire them. And if you could...
Could you explain that to me, Madam Chair? Who purchased them?
This would be the... Well, that's what I want her to go over with. If it's not my telling you, it's my asking, yeah. Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, members. The other spreadsheet, the kind of the second box down... and that's Representative Wagenius is referring to state park land acquisition. And you'll see on there, and this was testimony in front of it was discussion with the commission. So the commission knowingly in the recommendation was looking at which parcels Parks and Trails Council had purchased on behalf of DNR in holdings within state park boundaries. And so you will see it does say Crow Wing State Park, $590,000 to reimburse Parks and Trails Council. Scenic State Park, we would reimburse Parks and Trails Council at $340,000. Teta Gooch State Park would reimburse Parks and Trails Council at $240,000. So those lands have been acquired on behalf and at the request, is my understanding, of DNR for those state park inholdings. It's also my understanding that Split Rock Lighthouse State Park and William O'Brien State Park, both DNR and the Parks and Trails Council are working in partnership for those two next top priority parcel acquisitions.
I think what this brings up is just one of our structural deficiencies where we are relying on other folks to purchase lands and then reimbursing. And so these obligations are out there without the money. And I think that's one of the problems that we're running into, purchasing without having the money on the table. So that's just one of those things that I think we all need to work on.
Did you have your hand up?
Well, Madam Chair, I was listening to your comment, and I don't disagree with the major part of it, but I would disagree a little bit with the reimbursing, because they buy the property and then own the property, then turn around and sell it to the Department of Natural
right.
Resources.
Exactly.
The DNR does become the buyer from the...
Yes.
Well, Madam Chair...
Yeah, let's go through the chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Fredericks, but we have to give them approval to do that. And so this is, you know, I did this on the House floor because we have the right to do it, first of all. You agreed with me earlier. I don't think we've ever done it since the citizens have been on there. And I've been totally frustrated by the things I see going on. And just let me give you an example. You know, school trust land, an issue that's been near and dear to me for years. And I'm trying to make the point. And yesterday in the lands bill, in Representative Wagenius' committee, the legislature or the House members and took and put, I think it's about 500 and some acres.
Nice.
Where's Mr. Myers? Did
Excellent.
He scoot out of here?
He saw you coming.
And I don't want to pick on Mr. Potter. He's too nice of a guy. Oh, there's Meyer over there. Bob, would you come? Would you come up? So, Madam Chair, here's my frustration. In this bill, the DNR bought 54 acres of aquatic management area land for $2,907.40 an acre average, of which $47,000 went to the Trust for Public Land and $110,000 went to the DNR. Yesterday, Madam Chair, you put aside 537 acres of school trust land for free. And once again, the school kids take the hit. And we're buying land and buying land and buying land for the DNR or to pay back the Parks and Trails Council. And the school trust land that was bought in the Parks and Trails Council was traded out. But I want to know, Mr. Myers, if that school trust land that was recently, and Mr. I can't remember now, I'm getting a mind blank, but anyway, that was traded out of our state parks. If you traded it out at the value of $2,907, or in the case of the DNR parks land here, I averaged it out, $6,414 an acre. Did the school kids get the value of $6,414 an acre when you bought their land out of the state park? But you didn't buy it. You traded it out with other lands of equal value. Did they get an equal value of $6,414? Because, members, that's what my frustration is all about here. We can't take care and manage the land we have, and we just keep buying more because the Parks and Trail Council goes out and buys land in a state park that nobody's going to do anything with anyway. Eventually, it get bought out. Or they go out and give the Nature Conservancy or whomever. So just answer my question here for the public. Let's talk about buying land and trading land. Did the school kids get $6,414 an acre for the land they had in holdings in your state park?
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. This seems like a discussion we had last night, but we'll have it again. The question that Representative Rukavina raises is a good one. We did go through a lengthy process taking the school trust status off of state park in holdings. To do that, we have to do value for value. So we do an appraisal on the school trust property by a certified appraiser, private individual company appraiser that's certified by the state to do that. We appraise the land that we're exchanging. Oftentimes it's a higher value forested land. It's state forest land that we exchange for, hopefully contiguous to an existing parcel of school trust land, thereby benefiting the value of that. Part of the problem with the school trust lands that people need to understand is that they're isolated parcels scattered throughout the state. So when the Dietrich proposal was to have a separate agency manage school trust forest lands, we would have one forester traveling out to this little section of land here, and they would go through a bunch of state land to get there. They would manage that 40-acre parcel, and then we would have to have another forester come out and manage the land surrounding it, whatever it would be. That's a big issue with the school trust lands, is consolidation of them. But when we do the exchanges, when we went through the exchange process, it took us a long time through the state park process. We estimate, or we appraise the value on the school trust parcel, appraise the value on the state land. Oftentimes it's not acre for acre, because one type of land is going to be more valuable than the other. We come up with a formula that would give, say, 80 acres of state forest, productive forest land, to the school trust in exchange for the 65 acres of state school trust land that would be in the state park. Now, this has to be done on a parcel-by-parcel basis, and that's why it takes a long time. I mean, there's costs of the appraisals involved, and these are all general fund costs that we're using, dollars as well. So we don't buy out the trust land. We aren't paying them $6,000 per acre. We're exchanging the trust status off of that trust land, or we exchange the trust status off of the trust land within the state parks for more productive land within the state forest system that they can generate income off of. So, Representative Ruka Davina, did they get $6,000 per acre? No, they got the value of that plot of land for a value of more productive land. And furthermore, those exchanges have to go through the Land Exchange Board, which the governor sits on, the attorney general, Rebecca Otto, secretary of state, and they review each of those parcels. We have to do due diligence on each one. The appraisals are verified and certified. So I can tell you wholeheartedly that the school trust receives full value for the appraisals, for the value of those lands that are out there.
Madam Chair, I don't think you can tell me that, or you can tell anybody in the legislature that. Because you can see right now, you know, what happened in committee yesterday sometime over in the House, and then last night our little exchange, and you just paid $2,907 in this bill for a wildlife management area. And I have the language here, members. It's an aquatic management area, the same name as this right here. And last night, they got it for free.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, the proposal in the House lands bill came from the
Mr.
House.
Chair,
and that
Madam
land,
Chair,
that land is
Mr.
managed
Myers,
as internal improvement.
We don't have
land.
To. I'm just making a point.
Hey,
I'm making a point, Madam Chair, that I am totally frustrated with us purchasing and purchasing and purchasing more land when we are the third largest landowner, I think, in the United States of America, and we can't take care of what we have now. That is my frustration. That's why I did the amendment on the House floor, and that's why I had the support of a majority of the House members.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I appreciate that, Representative Rukavina, and I just want to, first of all, address your concern about the fact that the legislature makes this decision, not the citizens. And I just wanted to point out that in the Minnesota Senate, the legislature, by an overwhelming, nearly unanimous vote, passed the recommendations, passed this bill, as you see in front of you, and decided that we did support land acquisition. And so that was a decision made by the legislature, so I don't think we even need to talk about the citizens' role in this. This is between the House and the Senate now, and the governor, if he'll talk to us. So I think we can set that issue aside. The question is, what does the legislature want to do? And the Senate supports land acquisition. We had a lot of discussion about it, but clearly the votes were there to support what's in this bill. So the other thing is, it's really clear that there's geographic differences. I'm not saying anything that's news, news breaking here, that we know that. In your part of the state, many people think there's too much public land. In the metropolitan area, we want more land set aside for natural areas. We want to protect land for people to use where populations are growing in the greater metropolitan area. I can't speak for Senator Frederickson's part of the state, but I suspect they're interested in having some protected land in some other parts of the state as well. And so I understand why you might not want to do some of these things in your district or in northern Minnesota, but why punish the rest of us for that problem that you have? And, you know, that's what I object to. And I also object to the fact that, you know, we saw in that same legislative auditor's report that you've been quoting about the lack of land management that places like your district are getting more money back than they would have gotten if the land was kept in private ownership anyway. And so I'd like to focus on how we can find some common ground here, because I think most Minnesotans want to see land protected, especially when land prices are low and when in areas that are growing. I mean, that's what that whole 3-8 vote, that was a big part of what it was about. I mean, it was about clean water. I guess the polling is very clear.
Yeah,
that was the number
water.
One reason clean people water. Voted for it.
And the
but,
arts.
And what?
And the arts.
But
it was
and,
about a concerted effort.
And,
by
Madam Chair, if you'll let me finish, and if you saw the ads and you saw what a lot of people said, this was about protecting those special places that we treasure in Minnesota before they're gone. And I know in the metropolitan area, that issue resonates very strongly, that people see development and they want to make sure in every community that there's a there's places where we protect wildlife, we protect rare species, we protect places where people can go and recreate and enjoy nature. And there's so we have a very, very different perspective, and we need to think about the whole state when we pass this bill.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson.
Senator.
I think about the whole state, and I've been thinking about the whole state. I've been all over this great state in the last 10 months. I don't agree with the legislative auditor's report, and I see they're here, that PILT payments pay more than property taxpayers. It's absolutely ludicrous. I don't know what their comparison was, if they took into account all PILT payments or what. But I know this, that there is a lot of state parks out there. There's one up in our area. There's many in St. Louis County. And they're all not being taken care of. In fact, where's, there's nobody from Parks and Trails, but I know that there's problems up in the one on Ash Lake or Ash River. Is it Wooden Frog, Mr. Potter? What's the name of that state park up there where the septic system is failing? But let's buy another $2.2 million for 343,000 acres. I'll tell you what, you could buy all of northeastern Minnesota for $6,414 an acre. You could buy it for $1,000 an acre. I don't know where we got the bargain on this. The point being, you're not preserving land. Your argument doesn't hold water because you're paying $2.2 million for 343 acres that are already in a state park that's already there and established. Why don't you fix up what's there? We had 184,000 people last week on unemployment insurance, and 500 of them a week are dropping off. And I've been discussing this at the LCMR, and I had the support of the chair, that we should put some of this money into fixing up things and putting people to work. We've had, for the last 4 weeks, 200,000, 240,000 in January, 200,000. It's going down because a lot of people are just dropping out, falling off, and I wanted to do something. Well, I don't have, right now, we have this unemployment problem and a problem in our economy. If you want to go and buy more land, go ahead and buy more land. You know, come up and enjoy the land you already have. We want a Viking stadium in Hibbing. We want a historical society in Virginia and a zoo. Well, we probably got a zoo up there, but, somewhere, maybe in Calumet. But we can't have it. We have to drive down here to utilize that. You know, this mass purchasing of land, I could get it in the 3-8 where we paid $37 million, was it, to hunt on property that the Finnish logging company bought from Boise Cascade that we hunted for free. For 30 years we hunted for free, but all of a sudden we had to pay $37 million to hunt on the same land that we hunted on for free for as long as I've been around. And because it's there, we might as well spend it. We can't take care of what we have. That's what the point I made in the House, and the majority of the House agreed with me. So why don't you, well, I'm going to go and find out about this lawsuit and see how much more money we have to cut from nursing homes and cut from our schools and hammer our higher education students and do all the terrible things, close down the Sox in Eveleth, Minnesota. Close down, listen, the perfect storm, you want to hear about it? I talked about it yesterday, Senator. Eveleth got cut $300,000 in LGA. They own that building where the nursing home is. The nursing home had the Sox Center attached. The governor just unilaterally closed and put those mentally ill people out on the street. And now the nursing home, because they've had such troubles, and it was the city that was keeping them alive and keeping them going, and that Sox rent, now they're closing down a nursing home. Where are people going to go? But let's spend $4 million buying land we don't really need to buy at this time because it isn't going anywhere. And so that's my point. That's my frustration. That's why I'm going to leave, because I'm going to go see now how much of this unallotment is going to close another nursing home in my district or maybe shut down another who knows what for the mentally handicapped, mentally ill, medically handicapped, whatever. That's my point. Well, that was my point in the whole offering that amendment, because I just cannot see us in these tough times when we're cutting everybody else, buying more land, giving the DNR more money so they can come. And I'm sure Mr. Myers is probably charging the school trust today for being here, too. So with that, I'll go, and you guys can figure this out. Make a proposal to us, because I got better things to do than sit here and argue about whether or not we should be buying more land, because...
Madam Chair, I think a couple other points we made on the Senate floor. One is that in the last couple of years, we've spent about $100 million on our parks and trails system. Very, very little of it, virtually none of it for acquisition, out of $100 million. So we have an enormous amount of money that has been going in to taking care of our state parks and trails. And it's going to take a while to catch up. But we are getting there, and we're investing. We have 25 years to invest in it, and at this rate, you know, we're going to have, you know, Cadillacs on every state park parking lot, you know.
Because one last thing before I go to it is rather frustrating, Madam Chair and members, that already the submissions are in for next year's what's going to be a 2-year grant cycle, right?
Perhaps.
Yes.
That's what we want. And out of the 55 or $52 million that we are going to be able to appropriate, the DNR put in 35 proposals that total $55,747,000. And you talked about it. Who's paying for them to do all of this, not just to talk about coming and sitting in the meetings? And, of course, they're going to get the kind of money they do because they put in more requests than the entire budget. And the university, while you're at it, praising our great scientists, put in 42 projects for $21.3 million, or 41% of the total amount. And so the citizens and these other little groups that come in and ask for 100 or 200 grand end up usually getting tossed to the wayside. But
Madam Chair,
you two can figure things out with Representative Frederickson, because he's the great environmentalist. But you should come up and see how I live, because I'm the best environmentalist, I think, in the entire legislature. And not referring to my stature, but I probably have the smallest carbon footprint of anybody in this place.
That's probably true. Yeah. And we're going to miss you, Representative Rubino.
What do I do with the
It's hard to have the last word, Madam Chair, when someone walks out the door. And it's hard to focus on a moving target. So I heard Representative Rukavina concerns about a wide range of issues. So it's a little hard to tell what the House position is really about. But what is the real issue here that we are, again, I'm frustrated. It's hard to negotiate when you don't know what the real problem is that people are raising.
Okay, well then let me see if I can more narrowly define some of these problems here and set some of them aside. And I'll start by setting aside the PILT issue, because in the House we have had lots of discussions about that, and the upshot of those discussions, while we really appreciated the legislative auditor's report, it put up some weird stuff, not the legislative auditor, but it showed us that we were paying more for pilt land in Otter Tail County than in Aiken County. Now, that didn't make sense to us. So because they found these things that didn't make sense, we are asking our fiscal staff and our research staff this summer to look at pilt. And I would hope that would be a shared task.
Makes
between
sense.
The House
check.
And the Senate, because it does seem that pilt is not working right. But the legislative auditor did not have time to get into the depth that we need.
Well, Madam Chair, I appreciate that, and I think we do need more information. I mean, the auditor's report was very helpful, but we need to delve deeper into some of those questions. And, you know, I wish Representative Rukavina was here, so Representative Howes, maybe you can speak for him. And
yes, you know, I was the minority position in the House.
Well, I don't know who can speak for him, but... you know, in the Senate, interesting, you may be aware that there was a bill that passed that gave double pilt for the Sudan mine and the Vermilion
yes.
State Park. And I wonder, maybe this is about pilt. Maybe that's what Representative Rukavina would like to see when we purchase inholdings in Split Rock State Park and Teta Gooch. Maybe he just wants some double pilt and then he'll go home happy. I'm not quite sure what his real issue is, but... perhaps we should suggest that to him.
I think...
I'm not making an offer. I'm just asking a question.
I think there are multiple motivations from all sorts of different House members, and I'm not going to attribute any motivation to any one person, but I do think we can define some of the issues. And PILT is one, but I do think we should be setting it aside until we get... It does seem that it needs... some work because it's applied very inconsistently, and that I wouldn't want to make any pronouncements on PILT except for one. One of the issues that we have discussed in the House that affects both these lands and the new lands we're purchasing under the Heritage is that as we purchase more and more of these lands, we are acquiring with those lands PILT obligations and management obligations. Mm-hmm. And you and I work on those budgets, and one of the things that I can see crystal clearly is that as we go forward with purchasing lands and not having enough money to do management and PILT, and because general fund, we will not get it anymore, or additional anyway, that we're having to pull out of forestry and we'll have to pull out of parks and trails to do the management of these newly acquired lands. And that is a huge issue in the House. And I think that's a general, there's a real consistency. That's not a partisan issue. Am I right about that? That people are worried that as we acquire the lands, we don't have the management dollars. DNR certainly mm-hmm. doesn't have them. But where the management dollars will ultimately come from is from the forest account, because that's where money is, and from parks and trails, because that's where money is. And that's one of the, I think that's one of the concerns that I could express on behalf of the House. So we have two questions here. Senator Frederick.
Madam Chair, I guess I have a comment. I think the discussion about the PILT is very appropriate if you're looking at acquiring a large piece of property like the Vermilion State Park. I think that discussion should take place and really be thoroughly evaluated. I'm a little puzzled about why we would have that discussion rage over 9 acres to crow in addition to crowing State Park, or 55 acres to Teta Gooch, or 19 acres to Split Rock, where they're in the inholdings of a state park. We're actually buying those inholdings maybe beneficial and less expensive to maintain the park than if you have that private holdings within the state park boundaries.
There are two issues that you raise. One is the accumulative of keep on doing this. It's a cumulative impact. But secondly, I did I thought I was trying to be clear. Still not enough coffee. Trying to be clear that PILT should be set aside in this discussion.
Right. No, I understand that.
And I do think we need, I think PILT needs to be reworked, personally, but I don't have enough information to do that. But I think the good staff on the House and Senate side can pull that apart. And
Chair, I agree with that, and it's not a discussion for this conference right. committee. We can talk about it, but certainly your finance bills next year would be a good place to do that.
Well, I'm hoping we get information this summer that helps us move along on that PILT question, that House and Senate staff can give us good information that we can move forward on that next year.
Well, Madam Chair, I think PILT is the issue. Also, the school trust land is going to be tied into this in some fashion. And 9 acres, 16 acres is important because we've been 10-acred to death. Now we have hundreds of thousands of acres that, to put it quite bluntly, is the metro area's playground. And we don't get any reimbursement for that, but yet we have to provide the services that extend to all these areas. Public land is great, but not at the expense of rural Minnesota. We have rec property that we can't have school operating levies on. We have land that we can't tax. We get a little bit of PILT. It hurts, but we have members of the House that are adamantly opposed to any more PILT because they feel they have this building here where they don't get property taxes. But it's really just a drop in the bucket when you compare to all the land that we have that we don't get adequate reimbursement for. And I think that is the big question. And I think Representative Rukavina has drawn a line in the sand that some of us have joined him on. Enough is enough. We want to be adequately reimbursed for all the land that gets tied up in the public sector. And this is where we do that, in this building. I think we're dug in pretty strongly.
Madam Chair, and just one little point of information I like to share is that I represent the community of Falcon Heights, which is 66% tax-exempt property. So that's up there with St. Louis County. It's actually higher. And so people don't really understand that it is significant. I know you mentioned the metropolitan area, but in some communities, it's just as significant as it is in northern Minnesota, and we don't get a penny for that.
I know St. Louis County likes to argue that they have more land in PILT than anybody else, but they also have more land in private ownership than anybody else, too. So we're not going to solve the PILT issue, but I do think it does help you understand what's happening in the House and why you see these amendments. So, but we've set that aside.
Well, Madam Chair, just to touch on what Senator Anderson said. Yes, Falcon Heights is as it is, but you also probably have some businesses there. You also have libraries and entertainment within minutes of where you go. You have, I believe, a couple of professional sports stadiums that don't take you very long to get to go to the state fair. It's a 10-15-minute drive. We don't have any of those amenities in rural Minnesota up north. We have the Woodtick Theater in Akeley. It's not quite like the Guthrie, but I suppose we can be satisfied with that. We have a football stadium and a couple of high schools, and I suppose that's as close as we'll get to a Viking stadium. So you have the benefits far beyond what we have, even though you have land that's not on the tax rolls. Compared to us, you've got everything, and again, it's your playground in the summertime when you so desire.
We'd like you to come to our playground, too.
You know, unfortunately, I'm here today, and it looks like I might be here on my birthday, which is June 30th, if all this allotment stuff comes through.
That was my father's birthday.
Okay. I think we need to move on in this discussion, but it's also good, I think, that we get out some of the frustration here.
Madam Chair, real quick, I think I'm going to be summoned to caucus just because of the Supreme Court decision.
Yes, I think we're probably all to caucus on that. Is there anything else helpful that we can do right now?
Well, Madam Chair, I at some point, and I think we should accept brief testimony about some of the the projects that are sort of in dispute here, whether they're part of the House amendment or whether they're on the governor's list, if anybody would like to offer explanations of, you know, so committee members can make sure they understand what's at stake here. And I don't, this probably isn't the time to start that. I know there are people here representing the Como, the Get Outside, what's it called? The new name?
Get Outside.
The Get Outside, the old name, Get Outside program that we had talked about. And I don't know if.
This might be a good time to hear from
it
them.
Might be, since they're here, they're not paid lobbyists, so they won't be able to sit here 24/7.
I think that would be a good thing.
But I want to make sure folks from the governor's office are here to listen to them, because this is one of those projects.
Of course, they disappeared.
That they need to hear the explanation of. I think that's important.
And unfortunate.
Mr. Myers here, the emissary.
Is this a time that
there he is. Okay,
can
good.
Be, or I think that would be.
Would, if this would be a good time for them, maybe I we should ask them to come
yes,
forward.
Yes, and anybody
here.
Else in the, because we want to make sure you do have an opportunity. So please come forward.
If there's others because that are represented here that can't be here all the time, we should include them.
Welcome.
Yes. We've been working on this particular tract of land.
Madam Chair, you need to start by introducing yourself.
Oh, yes.
And who you are.
Madam
and
Chair.
How you're connected to this.
My name is Deb Robinson. I'm a member of the advisory committee that has been steering the Como Woodland Outdoor Classroom Project since 2006. And it goes back further than that, but I'll stop with that. I don't know exactly what the question is, of course. I don't know what the problem the governor has with our project. It seems very similar to a few other projects that are not in question, so it's hard for me to know what to highlight. As far as the K through 12, we don't have a specific focus. I mean, we are open to special education students. We do tours for special education tours. We do work with high school students at Como Park Senior High School. We do tours with kids who are taking day camps. I mean, so it's kind of all over the place. It isn't just specifically K through 12. And of course, it's open. It's an area that's open to the public, too. Is there any questions that anybody would like to ask so I know how to direct my my?
Let me just say, there is no question in the House. This was never, I mean, there's no question in the House that we supported this proposal. One of the things that I assumed all along was that this was kind of the metro side of a proposal that DNR has that I think we also funded in here that seemed to be so close in outcomes, which is of course what we want, so close in outcomes that it just seemed to be great this year. So it's hard for us to give you guidance since one is being questioned and the other isn't. So that's why we're having trouble relating back. It's not that we're not listening. Is that fair to say?
Yes, Madam Chair, and maybe we could ask Ms. Robinson just to give us a one-minute overview of what the project will do and what the outcomes are that you expect in terms of how many people will use this, how will they use this classroom once it's created?
Okay.
To the best of your ability.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Anderson. I am a volunteer. I'm not the project manager, so so I can't maybe be as quite as specific as you may want me to be. But as far as our proposal, we want to restore the 15 acres. There's actually 17.75, but we want to restore 15 acres and make them into individual biomes so that they have more educational value. We want to remove invasive species, which we've spent thousands of volunteer hours. There is a lot of volunteer activity in this particular project. Thousands of volunteer hours removing buckthorn with for the last 3-4 years and with community volunteers. But it's going to be an ongoing thing. The buckthorn goes out and the garlic mustard comes in, and so that's one of the outcomes. We have a educational result, which only $8,000 is going for our educational result. All of the that result is going to be almost entirely done with volunteers and our advisory committee. We're the deliverables for the acreage is a prairie biome. We're going to have a propagation garden that's going to help have native plants available for probably other uses, but also in our 15 acres. There's going to be ADA accessible trails, which about 4,000 feet of those. And there's going to be educational interpretive signage, but we're kind of concentrating on putting up educational posts that will just have numbers on them, and there will be online lesson plans, which is what we are developing with our own time, our advisory committee and our educational partners. Let's see. We want to receive DNR forest status, so we have already are working with them on that. We want to host 6 education training sessions, and I'm not an educator myself. There's other people on our committee who are working on that, so it's pretty difficult for me to talk about that in a lot of great detail. But we are working with the city has hired an educational coordinator that we're working with, so they've invested some time and effort into this too. And we also have student participation at our site of about 500 youths a year, and I think that's very underestimated because we have some pretty big events, and we make a lot of use of the Conservation Corps, and that's basically the results.
And Madam Chair, Ms. Robinson, I think one of the things that's unique about this project is that it's so urban and how many people might encounter this, children and adults. Do you have any way of guessing what the magnitude would be, or what are you expecting?
Well, like I said, we are definitely going to engage 500 youths in the educational part of it, mm-hmm. but with the nearby Como Zoo and Conservatory, I mean, we have millions of people who could possibly make use of this site. Because the visitor center is very close by. Well, I don't know. What does the zoo get?
Two million
people. And living around the lake, I can tell you, that's a lot of people. I think we really do want to work with them to get people over to our site, too. Matter of fact, the education coordinator that the city has hired has come from the Como Zoo and Conservatory Education area. So there is a connection there, at least amongst us, so personally. So.
And Madam Chair, that's that is a very small distance. I don't know if people can visualize that, but the classroom is, you know, a very short walking distance to the conservatory and zoo, like maybe it would be equivalent to a block or something like that. So it is accessible to these millions of visitors to Como Park, in addition to the children that you target. And Madam Chair, I just wanted to draw members' attention to a couple of other projects that are, I think, are very similar to this in here, which are not on the governor's list, as you mentioned. If you look at the side-by-side on page R19, I'm looking at, this is the
Well, we have a different name in here. The Senate kept the original name, which is called Get Outside Urban Woodland for Kids. That's 17.34. And then below that is expanding outdoor classrooms at Minnesota schools, and this is on school grounds to have outdoor classrooms. I was really confused by what Representative House said, because he was suggesting, well, if it's too much like what K-12 should do, it shouldn't be in this bill. So I would say that this second project is more like K-12 because it's actually at schools, but they're very similar in their purpose, and so I think that reflects the LCCMR's perspective that these are, it's really important in general to have projects that have the focus of getting children outdoors, engaged in nature, and learning science through that exposure, and learning a love of nature and the outdoors. And that's very much why we were interested in funding these various projects. So the expanding outdoor classrooms at Minnesota schools is an appropriation to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to establish additional and enhance existing outdoor school, forest, and prairie classroom networks throughout Minnesota. And then we have another project which would incorporate that into the academic standards. That's the next one, integrating environmental outdoor education in grades K through 12, and that's to the Department of Education. And then on the next page, on R20, Project Get Outdoors is also extremely similar in goals and intent as the Ms. Robinson's project. Project Get Outdoors even has a similar name, which is funding from the trust fund, again, to the DNR for Project Get Outdoors to develop out-of-school programs connecting children to local nature experiences. And so this is an example of one of those kinds of projects that is unique because it's situated in an urban area with access to so many people that could benefit from the programming. So I'm having a hard time understanding, again, why the governor's office would single this out. And so, Mr. Meyer, I hope this has been helpful for you, and we'll give you some information to take back to the governor's office.
Thank you so much for helping us.
Are there other questions, Madam Chair? I don't assume not.
Okay. I don't think there are any. Thank you for coming. Are there other folks in the audience who have projects that are on included in the governor's letter?
Mr. Meyer raised his hand.
With that exception.
We know Mr. Meyer will be here.
Yes.
With us. Whenever we're here, he'll be here, I suspect.
Okay. It seems to me that we have put on the table probably all the concerns, except for hearing from folks who would like to talk about projects that would not get funded under the House proposal, but I would prefer to hear testimony from them when House members are here. We could do it either way. If folks are here and can't be here at another time, I think it would be a good time to hear from you. I can certainly relate what you would say to Representative Bukovina and Representative House, or if you'd prefer another time, that would be okay too.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I do have an email from one of the lead researchers for the Carbon Sequestration and Wetlands Project,
mm-hmm.
who I think in some cases the projects that are named in the governor's letter, you know, the project proponents maybe don't know yet that they're being singled out. And
yes.
So depending on how much time we have to conduct this conference committee, I think it would be good to at least let them all know that they're on that list and see if any of them do want to come and very briefly address the conference committee. I think that would be, maybe Ms. Thornton could help us with that notification.
Madam Chair, members, yes. And obviously this letter was received yesterday. You hadn't had a chance to discuss it. We did not send it out widely, although it was in the Pioneer Press this morning, I noticed. So, yes, when you know when you're rescheduled, however you'd like to proceed, we will be in touch with
people. I think we should recess and come back this evening and make some talk about specific.
Say that.
Yeah. Over there. Is that okay?
Yes. Yes.
I think that because of we all need to get to our caucuses and talk about this constitutional issue that has just come up, and I do want House members here when we talk about the specific projects in this bill now. I think we've talked about all the general things that we need to talk about, and we will need to talk about a little bit more about things that are on the governor in the governor's letter. But I think the best course now would for people on both sides to have some discussions and for us to recess until a call of the chair. And what are you thinking about a time here?
Well, Madam Chair, we go into session at 1, correct, in the Senate, and we have several major bills, so I would expect we'll be in there for several hours, but not late into the evening, I wouldn't think. I would think dinner time-ish we might be done. That's a wild guess. What about the House?
Do we have a sense yet? I think that's about the same for us. I think this would be a good evening because for the rest of the week, I expect chaos.
And Madam Chair, I was going to mention that chaos thing that we really need to get this conference committee wrapped up and very quickly because the omnibus bills that Representative Wagenius and I are responsible for will be ready to go to conference committee, well, be passing on the House floor hopefully tomorrow, and ready to go to conference committee Friday or Saturday. So that's what we'll be immersed in after that time. So we need to try to get this rolling. So I think meeting tonight is a great idea. I would support that, and hopefully we'll both be done with session and can come back without conflicts. It's possible we could set sort of an outside time, like if we're not done. We don't have to do that now, but we can put that out on our notice eventually that if it gets to be 7, 8, 9 o'clock, we probably won't start the conference committee meeting.
But we will try. We are going to recess to the call of the chair, and we will try to come together as soon after the adjournment of the body that adjourns later.
And, Madam Chair, I would invite, just for the public record, if there's people who have, a position or involvement in any of the particular projects that we've singled out that are in debate in this conference committee, we want to invite them to come back tonight, if possible, and, have a brief chance to testify. Otherwise, we don't know if we'll have another opportunity tomorrow. It could be, this may be our only chance.
I suspect this will be our last day for testimony.
So it's not a lot of time. It's not a lot of lead time, but it's the best we can do.
Right. I suspect this is it.
Madam Chair? So we believe that we can hold on to the room. I'll check to see if we can hold on through tonight. And maybe if we leave our stuff here, after everyone leaves, we'll lock it up.
Possession is 9/10.
If you want, right. And we'll try to hold on to it through tonight. But we can send out a notice, an email on that.
Well, I think the public is used to this. And I just want to acknowledge that we also have a House page here. Colin, and thank you for also serving us. And with that, we will recess to the call of the chair this afternoon or evening. Okay.